Do you want me to? Do you want me to do a sound effect of a door opening? Welcome to the green room.
Well, what I was really envisioning is we should do some sort of thing where, you know, it's like
5 minutes to curtain, 5 minutes to curtain, and welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Then we're welcome again. Hey, first time in the green room. I'm on in Act Two, Scene Five as well, and Policeman Number One. So we got a lot of time to talk. Have a seat. We're the groupies, and we're the...
You're responsible for this?
I did. Listen, I just said, hey, you want to do a podcast? That was 4 years ago. I don't know.
110 episodes ago.
And we're still waiting.
And we're still, I kid.
Oh,
here we go. Boy, we missed him, too.
Going to be disinvited.
Never.
Why does my key code not work on the green room? Why can't I get it?
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
Oh, and away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the green room. Have a seat and shoot. There we go. My new opening, and I already blew it.
Shh, Ron's at the door. Everybody pretend we're not here.
Pretend we're not. Hello?
Hide.
Hello?
Hide.
He won't go away.
I know.
Hello again. And welcome to the Green Room. Have a seat, and if it's your first time here, get ready to have some conversations about the art and business of community theater. See, I snuck the title of this podcast.
Very clever.
We got some time before your call. I'm policeman number two, so I don't go on until the end of the show. We're the groupies, and we get some of our best ideas here, and we share information you can use to make your community theater group the best it can be. Sometimes we slip into other topics, but you understand how green room conversations go. Oh, you don't? Well, you're about to learn. I'm David Warr.
Inviting.
The ringmaster of our little band, and looking around the green room today, I see...
I'm Brian Burchett Ross.
Carol Slifka.
I'm pointing at you, Bob.
Oh, Robert Yeoman.
Hi, my name's Ron. It's my second time.
Long-time listener, first time, second-time caller.
It is.
So thank
it
you,
is.
Ron.
If you're the ringmaster, does that make what does that make the rest
well,
of
us? Well, I wasn't
wild
sure. I got
animals.
Tired of being called El De Facto.
You
want to
be the lion tamer?
And,
no, we're wild animals.
Or wild animals.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Or a bunch of clowns.
I was thinking I'm the clown in the group.
Yeah. It's my circus and my clowns.
There you go.
Sometimes you realize it is your circus.
Unfortunately, it's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
So today, unfortunately, it's been pretty quiet out there in the mailbag, so we don't have any mailbag with us today. I mean, we have a mailbag, but it's empty.
John, send us something.
We miss you guys.
We'd
Patricia,
love to hear more from
Patricia.
You.
Christmas cards?
Yeah.
Question mark?
It's just been quiet, and I presume, as I did last episode, it's because they're all hard at work on their current productions. Hopefully we haven't alienated everybody yet, though we're working on it. We're working on it after last episode. So we'll see how we do. But I brought some programs that we can look through at some point, but just because we want to do that. And then we have a... I like looking through my old programs to see what shows I've seen.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty cool. So this one's from The Drowsy Chaperone. The Gilded Age, A Tale of Today, which apparently it's City Lit Theater, where I have no idea where that's at. It's a world premiere of Mark Twain's The Gilded Age, A Tale of Today.
Love Howard. This is an audio medium, and we're
as Dave strolls down memory lane.
Literate theater.
The rest of us.
I don't
will
know
take
where this was.
City. What does that say there? City.
City Lit.
Oh, okay. Doesn't say.
Incorporated in 1980. It's an Illinois group. I saw this in Chicago.
Illinois.
Unless there's another Chicago. Yeah, Eric Burke, alumnus of Monroe Community Players, was in it. I took a weekend trip to Chicago to see that. So
he was
I remember
the
that.
Music man.
Oh, that's traumatic for Ron. Wasn't it?
It's a trigger warning.
The trombone. Wasn't it the trombone?
Oh, the trombone, yeah. When we did it at the middle school.
The Marvelous Wonderettes, Avenue Q, which we mentioned
school?
Last episode.
It was the middle school, I think.
Junior high, in my opinion.
Out of Sight, Out of Murder, which I was with the Toledo rep. That was a fun one.
Sort of.
Book of Mormon, one of my favorites.
I love Book of Mormon.
The book.
It's one of the ones that's like, is that ever going to come to community theater? My guess is no.
Hello.
But, you know, the Mormons just elected a new prophet.
Yeah. Did they?
Yeah. The old guy died, so the new guy is 93.
Yeah.
They needed some fresh blood,
some youngsters.
It's always the next oldest person.
They elected a new prophet.
Yes, that's what it's called.
That's the president, essentially.
Okay. All right. I would love to read about the criteria on that, but no.
There's too many songs in there they couldn't use.
Who?
Community theater.
I don't think so. I think they could use anyone.
Any community theater could do it.
Yeah.
Book of Mormon?
Sure. Yeah. I think the heart problem would be casting it.
See, and this goes back to the episode where we were discussing, I wasn't there, but we're discussing, what was it, fear and what was that topic that John Smith sent in about, being courageous? The C word, courageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be courageous. You can't just look and say, well, our community is all a bunch of uptight whatever. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. I just can't imagine there'd be a big call for people singing about maggots in their scrotum.
You never know until you try.
Still touring.
Agree, but not community theater.
Well, that's because it's not.
Because it hasn't been given.
Don't mistake me. I love the show. I know all the songs.
Okay.
And
she loves it more than I do because I don't know them.
Oh, love that show.
I know. I love the show, but I don't.
Hello.
Know. I stopped memorizing songs after West Side Story. I'd take that back. I know all the songs from Rent. I know all the songs. So that was only 40 years ago. So
okay.
I'm edgy. Getting better.
Edgy.
Oh, I know. Oh, speaking of edgy, I know all the songs from Rocky Horror, too.
Yes.
Here's one I saw Christina Applegate in Sweet Charity. That's something that's still making the rounds at community theaters.
Christina Applegate still making rounds at community
theaters? No. Well, she sadly has MS.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to cut
but
this.
But I think Sweet Charity still is.
Yeah, that's another one of those eye rollers for me.
She has a podcast of her own as well, actually.
Oh, good.
A little unknown show called Beauty and the Beast.
Oh. Yeah.
So, I wonder if Disney ever made anything.
I don't know if they made that work or not.
I tell you, man.
It's very high concept.
It is.
Then there was Tarzan.
Oh, Phil Collins.
Oh, God.
You want to go listen to her podcast? Let's go.
The only thing I learned about Tarzan is I can take Phil Collins for one act.
Well, you know what?
Two acts is just a bit much.
Sue-sue-sue-dio to you, Dave.
Boy, I'm telling you, I'm feeling something in the air tonight.
Kiss of the Spider Woman, which was a movie that nobody saw.
It's a little Mormon here.
I love.
No jacket required.
I love Kiss of the Spider Woman. Now, that's a great musical.
This was actually, because we never talk about Christmas Carol now.
How did I sneak that in there? Come on. It's a nice creamsicle look there, though. I like the color.
This episode will drop around Christmas time. This was actually from the National Theater of Scotland.
Drop around Thanksgiving.
And it's a production I'd kind of like to do because they integrated puppets. So the ghosts were puppets.
We've lost Carol.
Carol, wake
up. Why would you? The only Christmas Carol that I'll ever watch is The Muppets Christmas.
That's what I just said. They use puppets.
Don't defile it by. Oh, I thought you were saying there was a new one coming out.
No.
Oh.
No.
This is by the National Theatre of Scotland. They were touring. And what was interesting about it is you went into the theatre, but they set a stage up on the stage. So you actually went into a box that they created on the stage. And it was so instead of using the big 1,000-seat house, you sat in the small, intimate, about 90-seat house that they built on the stage.
Everybody sit in the middle.
It was very, very environmentalish. So you felt like you were sitting in Scrooge's counting house.
Gotcha. Huh. I just wanted to.
That's the show you're over.
That was a trigger warning for Carol.
I've been so. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you should have warned us
except
beforehand.
Except for the Muppets Christmas, then we have to watch it every year at my house.
See, now the only one I watch is Scrooged with Bill Murray.
I like Scrooged too.
That's the one I like. Carol.
Well, it's so meta because it's Christmas Carol doing Christmas Carol.
Yeah. It's
that's a thing, Carol.
I know. From about 10 years ago.
So, what are we going to talk about?
6-7.
What are we going
to... Oh!
Yeah.
Trigger.
I still don't get that.
We're not
supposed to. That's the point.
I know.
That's the point.
That's what they say.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I still think there's some hidden meaning in there that we aren't getting. It probably has to do with drugs.
No, it doesn't.
Sex?
No.
Rock and roll?
No.
Well, you hit the big three.
It means nothing.
Okay.
There's been research done.
Yeah, which is amazing to me.
What are we talking about?
6'7".
6'7"?
6'7". 6'7".
You don't know about 6'7"?
No.
Oh, my gosh. 6'7".
I know about something, but I don't know about.
6'7", man.
The epitome of pop culture.
Is this something the kids say?
Yeah. Yes. It's the new thing in school is the kids say 6'7".
So now when you drop this podcast, the hashtag has to be 6'7". We'll get so many listens.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing.
The word 6 and then the word 7 or 6... /7
Probably just the do, two, just do
the
both.
Two numbers next to each other, and the up down is very important.
Well, I can't put that on a hashtag.
I know you can't, but 6'7". So
in
there
fact,
are
the
some
more you do it, the more uncomfortable I'm getting.
It's big on the top.
There are theories.
It's big on the top.
6'7" is it started out by kind of a whatever
Stop.
Type thing.
He's 6 or 7.
Brian's giving a very visceral response the hand motion.
I have been triggered, folks.
I'm loving it. Seven.
We have got to get this on YouTube. That's the only way people will appreciate this.
Oh, I have been triggered.
6'7".
I don't even know why, but I have been.
So, and there's no good way then to segue into this.
Not at this point.
But
no.
We're going to do it anyway. So, Carol.
Yes.
Today's topic we were going to talk about, but you had an experience that made you think about something. Why don't you tell us about that experience and let's get into the topic.
Okay, I will tell you about it. And let me preface this by saying I don't mean to make it sound like I'm like the greatest thing since sliced bread. Okay, I'm not trying to brag or anything. This is just what happened to me. So I had a niece who got married last weekend. Well, it's because I had some very nice things said to me, which I'm going to repeat. So anyway, my goddaughter, my niece, got married last weekend, and about a week before the wedding, she called me and asked if I would do a reading. Mm. I said, sure, send it to me. So she sent me the reading, and it was a poem about marriage by Neil Gaiman, author Neil Gaiman. It was not a religious reading. It was I had never seen it. I had never heard it.
The author and comic book writer.
Yes. American Gods.
Sandman.
The Ocean at the End of the Lane. Yeah.
Sandman.
Anyway.
So I read through the poem. It was, like I say, it was like a week before the wedding. I read through it many, many times. I looked for hidden meaning. I tried to decide, okay, where do I want to make my pauses? Where do I want emphasis? Where do I want to, do I want to do any hand gestures? I mean, you know, I really studied it very carefully and rehearsed it to myself several times, recited it for my husband, got some feedback. You know, I mean, I worked on it is my point. Mm-hmm. So we get to the wedding. I go up. I do my reading. It goes very well. Throughout the rest of the day and into the reception, I had so many people compliment me on what a wonderful reading it was. And I had a cousin of mine said to me, you have a gift. And it made me start thinking, okay, and I had somebody else say, oh, you are such an orator. It is really just, you know, you don't see somebody so talented. Like, and I thought, no, I worked at this. It's, I mean, not that you don't have a natural inclination towards something, but I would not necessarily say I have a gift. It's just that I worked really hard at it, and I had enough training and enough insight and enough background in the English language and in teaching English to know how to make things more powerful and whatever. So what it comes down to into acting is it a gift or is it work? Is it something that you are either born with or you're not? Or is it something that you can train anybody to do? So then I started thinking, okay, well, it's like baseball. Okay? Anybody can pick up a bat and try swinging at it. If you do that every day, all day, you work really hard at it, can anybody reach the level of professional?
Of a Mickey Mantle? Or
yeah. I mean, is it, how much is innate talent and how much is just hard work?
And so I think that goes into acting as well. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody is, apparently people are more afraid of public speaking than dying, so they'd rather be in the casket than speaking at the funeral, as we've heard that before. So, you know, there are some things, and I would be too worried about getting hit by the ball in baseball to even commit myself to that. But the question then becomes, how much of acting is talent and how much is work?
33%.
Discuss.
33%.
And there's your answer.
Okay, next
Thank
topic.
You, folks.
Yeah.
You're saying
in the green room.
You're saying 33% talent, Bob?
Correct.
Okay. Hmm.
And where does that number come from, Bob?
My tuchus.
I figured.
Nice.
Okay.
Well, thanks,
but no,
Bob.
And I have seen, you know, in my years of working with middle schoolers and high schoolers on the stage, I have seen kids who have no experience whatsoever come up and work really, really hard and do a really, really nice job. And then I've also had kids who have a lot of experience and come in and barely look at the script and bomb it. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think a lot of it, the vast majority of it, is interest and talent. I mean, interest and work. Mm-hmm. I think a lesser amount is innate talent.
And I'm not sure.
And that's why I bring it up.
I mean, certainly we know that acting and techniques can be taught. There's acting schools, there's acting classes, there's everything to hone the craft. But I and I'm not going to mention any names, but we have seen people in many shows that it's like no matter how hard they work, they don't get past the "it sounds like I am reading this script for the first time" stage.
Mm-hmm.
Stop looking at me.
and they, you know, you give them all the tools, all the same thing that the other people. Meanwhile, their partner next to them is, you know, makes you believe that she is Hedda Gabler.
Yeah.
And sorry, we go listen to the last episode to understand why we're referencing Ibsen now. But it's that kind of thing that I would say innate talent is actually a little more of it than the training. Now, you can have all the greatest talent and all the great talent you want, and if mm-hmm. you aren't properly trained, it's unharnessed, you're not going to go far with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I don't want to take words out of like home run Ron's mouth here. But, you know, you can have that basic thing and do well in a small pond, so to speak. But once you hit the show, it's called the show. I did Damn Yankees. I know baseball.
There it is. Yeah.
But you know, then you find out that it takes a lot more work than you ever anticipated as well. I mean, there's some people that are going to get cast because they're just good, and then there's people that are going to get cast because they're good. But the people that you really want to watch are the ones that are good and have worked at it.
Yeah. Well,
so maybe it's a 50-50 balance to
me. Yeah, because then that comes up to auditions as well. Now, if I audition for something,
if I
audition for something at Monroe Community, you guys have seen what I do. You know how I work. You know what I can and can't do. But if I go to some place where they've never seen me on stage, and there is, even if they give you the sides in preparation, you don't know what the director is looking for. You don't necessarily know what the whole play is about, so you can't develop a character. So how do you present yourself in such a way so that they know that even though you might feel a little rough around the edges at the audition, that you're going to be able to knock it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball reference again. You're welcome.
Aren't you glad you came back, Ron?
Yeah.
Making up for lost time.
Woo!
So that's what it works into for me, too, is if I would want to go, because I know when I have auditioned at other places, I feel like they're not really getting a sense of what I can do because they don't know me.
I agree.
So how do you get around that? And as a director, if you have somebody come in and they're completely unfamiliar to you, how do you know whether or not they can pull off the role?
You don't. I mean, I think that that's where community theater, I think, is one of the toughest nuts to crack because it is so community. You work with the people that you know.
For good
you
know. Or bad.
Right? Right.
Exactly. Better for worse. You know, yeah, we're about worse. The community.
Right. And so, like, so for an example, when we did, and here it is, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So if you're scoring at home, that's my first reference today. there was a group of eight of us that went up from Monroe to Wyandotte. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To audition. And we all went in. And I had purchased the script when I found out they were doing the show, and Bill, rest his soul, was the one who told us, you guys should all come and try an audition. So we went. I bought the script. I read it, and I tried to figure out, okay, which character do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Because the way that they do, the way Lucinda Chavez ran her auditions is you picked which characters you wanted to read for. Oh. It wasn't just a, you read for everything.
Yeah.
Now, you could read for everything, but then there were other characters that you could read. So I had identified that I wanted to read for Cheswick because that was the character that, after reading the book and reading the script, I identified with more. So I did everything I could to kind of develop a character. Now, that was extra work on my part of getting the script ahead of time because I know most times some people don't. But I got that script. I read it backwards, frontwards. I mean, I knew. So when I went up there, I didn't know what she was looking for, but I gave her what my interpretation was. And then it was also we had group scenes where we all read together. And again, because I had read the script, mm-hmm. I knew what these other characters were supposed to be like.
Yeah.
So I was able to react and act based on what my interpretations were. You know, we all ended up getting cast, and it was interesting because she ended up casting one person who totally out of their comfort zone, Gary Jenkins. I know he doesn't listen to the podcast, but he was cast as geez. Now I can't remember the character's name, but he's the older, he's gay. That's why he's been put, right? That's why he's in the asylum, mm-hmm. because his wife thinks he's gay. Mm-hmm. So he checks himself in. Well, Gary Jenkins is no, I mean, but he went up and read, and he gave her a little bit of an inflection, and she absolutely fell in love with it. And then she's like, you need to run with that. Well, the entire ride home, Gary's freaking out. He's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. How am I supposed to do that? Bah, 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 bah. And Bill, you know, talked him off the ledge. And it worked out well. So I think it's just to make a big circular, I don't know what I'm talking about, but community theater is you just kind of have to put yourself out there if you're going to someplace else. And it helps to have somebody else with you. Because if you're going in blind.
Yeah.
You don't know because that director already, and we're all guilty of it. They already know who they want,
right?
And it's a question of in general, they have an idea of what they want or who they want. It's whether or not those people show up.
Sure,
and it's when they don't, when it becomes a challenge. And I think that, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to stop because now we're completely off.
No, but I know what you're saying.
Well, and so I'm going to. Sound like bragging here to myself. So for the longest time, I had been cast in every show I had ever tried out for. And it's easy to get a little full of yourself when you do that. Now, not always the part I wanted, but, you know, I had a good streak going there. Part of that is because I was a man at the right place at the right time and the right age. But it took longer in my career not to be cast. And where I discovered, of course, is in Monroe, I got a good shot of being cast regardless. I just walk in the door, they're probably going to put me in a show, you know, that sounds bad, now I'll never get cast in Monroe again. But, but
the three directors
when I, and, yeah. and I was getting cast in other area groups as well. But then I go to a group that frankly had hundreds of people try out. And callbacks, there were 10 of us trying out for the same role. Not only did I not get the part, I didn't even get put in the show, and this was a big show with probably 100 actors. Wow. I mean, I'm looking through the list, it's like, I think I'm the only one that didn't get cast. So, and I thought I did a pretty good audition. So, I think, there's some of that, depending on your environment, is going to really determine where you cast. But if you don't put in the, what I've learned over the years is I also make sure to go to workshops, and I go to get, I had training in college. I have training, you know, I've had the training as well. But I think all that training doesn't matter if I didn't have the innate something that people like when they see me on stage.
Yes.
And frankly, that other actors like too. I've gotten compliments from actors. I guess it's easier to brag about yourself than I thought. I've gotten compliments from actors saying, I love working with you because you give me so much. And I'm sitting there saying, I'm just being me, or the character at the time. But, you know, it's like, so what is that unquantifiable so much that you're giving? And I think that's the innate talent that some people have and some people just don't.
Yeah.
Like I say, I've there's one man, dear friend, watched him try to act for years and years and years. No, it's not you, Bob. but every time he's gotten on stage, he's always wondered why he never gets the bigger roles. Well, it's because he's stiff as a board when he gets on there.
Yeah.
And I've worked with him to try to help him and get over some of the stuff, but he just can't go past that. And he's doing the work, but because he's missing that spark.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard for people to see themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I get up there, it's like, yeah, I'm great.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they cast me?
Right.
But then, frankly, somebody like I'll drop this name because it's complimentary, Leo Babcock walks in, and suddenly it's like, crap, I'm in the chorus. Because you don't know how good you're not until somebody who's even better comes along. But that's why I also like working with people who are even better, because that helps to raise you as well.
But you know, in that, there's always also everybody who's got the innate talent and still learns and does that. Everybody has, I think, a specific type of show that they're good at. Now, with you, like with Leo, Leo's a singer and a dancer, and he can knock it out of the park usually when he's up there. However, I'm not sure, and this is nothing against Leo, but I'm not sure Leo, if it had been cast, and here I go.
Oh, here it is, folks.
Here I go.
Here it is.
If he had been cast as the father in Twilight of the Golds, could have been Savage.
Yes.
Well, you know what I'm saying? True.
No, absolutely.
Like I say, and pardon me, hope Leo doesn't listen to this, but I hope he does. You're right. When it comes to song and dance, there's nobody better. But that's what he's also drawn to.
Right. Yeah. Like, he knows that that's his strength.
Yeah.
And
I feel that as much as I enjoy musicals, I know that singing's not my strong point. So surprisingly, in some groups, it's like, oh my God, I'm carrying this.
Yeah, sometimes you might be surprised. But
I think when it comes to acting, you know, that's what I'm drawn to, because as much as I enjoy the comedies, it's the dramas where I get my jolly. So
I just want to make observation. I may be totally out of pocket on this, but when I watched you in the McCluskey tribute,
yeah,
and when you did that opening number,
oh, I love that though,
Dave. It came through.
Oh, it did.
I looked at Brian and I said, he is in such his happy place right now.
Oh,
the joy on your face,
just
it showed throughout the entire auditorium, and
it
just sat there and I watched how you took control of that situation. And in control, I don't mean to where you were bossy, but you let everybody know, hey, here's what we need to do. But then you went in there and you performed and you were excited and the energy level was there again. And not just the one time, every time you guys ran that, it was the same level. And I thought to myself, my gosh, I haven't seen Dave this happy in such
on
a long
stage.
Time
yeah.
on stage. And it came through. So I just want you to know, I don't know, I mean, again, just from observation, that's not something that I could have done. So it was amazing to me to see, again, you guys didn't have much rehearsal time, you know, and you guys went out there and you did that number, and I just thought, wow, this is what it is right here.
Yeah,
he was just
which is both discouraging and encouraging. Encouraging because it's like, Oh, well, it was fun. Discouraging because it's like, well, that's my happy place and I don't get cast in that happy place enough. You know, to say it's, I haven't seen Dave Happy on stage this long. So that means I've been working, but not necessarily
enjoying. Enjoying. Yes.
Yeah, but let's counter that for a second. Hold on, God's talking to me. sorry, folks.
Soundproofing's not 100%.
Yeah, there's a library event going on outside of the podcast room. Anyway,
but the good news is that's why we're louder than usual. It's because they can't hear us.
But at the same time, let's go back to, and we talked about this in one of the, Mark and you and I talked about this in one of the previous ones last month. Moonlight and Magnolias. I think you were in your happy place there as well. I think.
I only think because when the script hit it on stage.
Well, you know, that helps.
That did help.
That wasn't happy.
But going back to our discussion about our scene when I'm calling the directors and excuse me, and you and I have that moment, and we both admitted that we connected with our characters at that moment. That's another happy place for you. That's a happy place for me. I think that's the happiest place for any actor, whether it be a comedy, drama, or a musical, is connecting to your character and letting the audience see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
I totally.
And I think you got something there. The happy place, too, is because I thought it was your happy place because, again, we were working together. And in that show, in fact, the three of us got to work together on that. And it was fun to be with friends doing something on stage that we all enjoy.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
So we had put the work in, but we all fed off of each other as well.
Mm-hmm. And we did.
That's something you don't get auditions, is that feed off.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something I rely on a lot.
And also, it's best when auditioning to have a member of the opposite sex about your same age and same physicality, because casting director, the directors at other places will get down to the point where it's like, okay, you're taller than she is. I want my leading lady to be the tallest on stage. Then they have something to go by. You will be cast because you came prepared with your opposite that helps the director.
Yeah, but it depends on the role too, Bob. Because if you're not auditioning for a part where you have a partner like that, like in Steel Magnolias, there was that was irrelevant. But I think what you're trying to say is not just the person of the opposite sex if you're playing that, but somebody else on stage that you can play off of, or that you can
counter,
relate to.
And they can counter you.
Yeah.
Right.
Which also then makes me wonder if it's talent, as they would say, or if it's really more an innate ability to play.
Exactly.
Because if the person is the person who's coming across stiff as a board and not doing it, you know, this is the only emotional tone I can get, even though this is the biggest tear-jerking thing in the whole script.
Mm-hmm. I'll help you out.
But, yeah. that's an in-joke. Is it because they're more concerned about how they are coming across? Is it that fear of public speaking actually getting to them? And so they're so focused on the technique that they lose the fact that you need to just be open to start with.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the three C's, courage.
Yep, courage.
You have to be able just to let it go. I think it also makes a big difference, not just the character, but just the material. Like when I was reading that poem, the first time I read that poem, excuse me, I liked it. I thought, oh, this has a nice message. The more I got into it, the more I really picked it apart, the more I realized what exactly it was saying, which helped me present it. Mm-hmm. And I now, there's nothing more highly recommended for me for a wedding reading. I mean, it's
absolutely
just the most beautiful thing. Mm. So I think that makes a difference, too. I think it's much easier to respond to material or a character that you love, that you really engage in, rather than something that you get up there and you're like, whatever. Like when we did Gilligan's Island, okay? No. I was Mrs. Howell. I was Lovey. Going into it, I loved that character. Mm-hmm. So it was, even though it was a musical, and even though the music director at one point told me that instead of singing that part, I should just speak it.
Gary I was told not to sing.
Yes,
so.
Yeah. Gary Jenkins was my Mr. Howell.
Yeah.
And but there were, I just loved that character so much that it was so easy just to get immersed in her. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and God help me, I want to do that show again.
Oh, my God.
Well,
oh.
And it doesn't even have to be...
It's not a great script.
And I think, I think you... And I want to point that out and piggyback off of that. It doesn't have to be the dramas. You know, it doesn't have to be Ken Talley Jr. or Big Daddy.
Yeah.
Roger... in Musical Comedy Murders. I played that character over and over. I love that character. Yeah. So it's easy for me to slip right back into the attitude, the everything about that guy.
I do think it does ultimately go back to the whole public speaking piece of it. Mm-hmm. That people are so afraid of it. Now, it is something that has come natural to me. I don't know where I got that from. Mm-hmm. But I think that people see acting and all they think of is, oh my gosh, I have to stand in front of these people and say these lines. And they don't understand that for those of us who, I don't want to say the word love, but love it, we don't, it's not me up, it's not Carol up on stage, it's not Brian or Dave or Bob on stage, it's the character.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't grasp that concept of that it's not me. Like, I remember one time somebody said, aren't you afraid that what people are going to think? I'm like, no, because it's not me. I didn't say it.
Right.
My character said it. And they just kind of look at you. Yeah, like, well,
and maybe it's part, like I say, not so much even playing, but it's imagination.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I remember from the public speaking standpoint of it, I had a Walt Disney Company I was hired by, in case you didn't know that. Our first conference, I had been with the company 6 months. It was in Anaheim. And our region had to give a presentation in front of, there was 5,000 people there. And our regional director was like, I need 2 volunteers. Well, everybody knew that Doris was going to be one of them because Doris was just, she was the cut-up honey. She was just going to be up there. She was going to talk, blah, 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 blah. And everybody else just sat there. And I thought, well, you know what? What the heck? I've only been here 6 months. I said, hey, Neil, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And he turned and looked like, really? I'm like, yeah. I said, it's not... whatever. I said, just tell me what you want me to say. I said, and I was, he's like, well, I don't have, I said, here's an outline. I said, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So I got up there and I started to talk, and then Doris and I had talked a little bit ahead of time, but then she said something. I made a little quip after it. Next thing you know, there's a couple people in front start chuckling, right? And the minute that happens, it's like you realize, okay, I've got them. They're engaged. Right. Now it doesn't matter what I look like or necessarily, but as long as I can get my message across, they're listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. And I mean, and people were just amazed. Like, I can't believe you could do that. I'm like, yeah, there's so many people. I said, didn't that bother you? I'm like, no. I said, all I saw were the 3 people in front.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else just kind of disappeared.
Just so background.
Yeah. So I think it is an innate ability, but I also think back to the comments that people made to you, is it's not a backhanded compliment, but they don't see the work that you put in.
Yeah.
And they just think, oh, there's Carol again. She's just up there spouting off because that's what she can do.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't see the time and the effort that you put into it. And they, you know, and I think that that's where sometimes people kind of don't get the credit they deserve, because it is. It's a lot of work. If you want to be good at something, it takes work.
But I do think now, and I haven't weighed in on the actual original topic because we've kind of taken the topic and bounced around to auditions and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I think that even just not the best, but the good in actors in community theater, they have an innate ability that you're born with, that you have. But that does not mean that they can get up there with that innate ability and be King Lear and be you know, Big Daddy just automatically. Everything takes work, all of it. Now, at the same time, I know I've seen, I've casted people that during auditions that blew me away, and I could not get them for the rest of the show. I could not get them into the character that they needed to be, no matter how hard I tried. And so even sometimes that innate ability isn't truly enough. Because if they're not going to take the time, if they're going to let the outside world affect them to the point that they can't focus on what they need to be for this show, then that innate ability just gets wasted.
Well, and so to bring into a sports analogy, because that's why I'm here, is, you know, I'll use Tom Brady as an example. Everybody knows who Tom Brady is, right?
Who?
Yep.
You know,
even me.
You know, yeah. So he went to Michigan.
Was he the oldest son? The Brady Bunch.
Wait, isn't he the one that's dating?
Marsha?
No. Tom Brady's the one that's dating the singer. What's her name?
Gazelle.
No, a Swiftie isn't.
No, that's Kelsey.
That's Kelsey.
Okay.
Even I know that.
Anyway, so Tom Brady went to Michigan.
Sorry.
You know, on scholarship, Mater Dei High School, California, big recruit. He was going to quit because he wasn't the starter. Mm. Okay. Even throughout his college career, he was not the starter. He didn't start until his senior year. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Drafted in the sixth round. And there's that famous picture of him at the combine and just his underwear, and everybody always talks about it. And he, you know, went to the NFL. I know. Went to the NFL as a sixth-round draft pick. Now is considered the greatest, possibly the greatest player of all time. Not because he had this innate ability, which he did, but he also was famously one of the hardest workers there was. I mean, mm-hmm. the man sacrificed his family for things. You know, and so, again, he had the ability, and you hear these stories of all these, oh, this guy's a natural athlete, but then you've got the tough, gritty guy over here that wins. So I think, to your point, it is true that you can get by on natural ability for a certain point, but you do have to work. You have to put the work in and make yourself better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you know? That's what I was going to say. The audition, when all you get is what you get at the auditions,
yep.
I guess maybe that's the question. Is it somebody who has the ability and then just isn't willing to push that
right.
to the next level by doing
right.
the work?
Yeah. Right.
And that's why they peaked at auditions.
Right.
Because, yeah, nobody should peak at auditions, for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. But I do think there has to be some innate ability. And going off of what Ron said, when you're up there and it's not you, because I know I know you have, and you probably have. I'm not sure what roles you've done that, probably not Miss Howell, but we've said things in character that we as human beings would never have said.
Okay.
Ever.
Half of what Weezer Absolutely. Said, I would never say.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean. You know, but at the same time, now for me, I could go up there and I love being a character.
Yeah.
But it's still, and I know I do it, and I think I can pull it off, but I hate going up and just being a public speaker. I don't like that. I'm getting up there and saying, hello, everybody. The beginning of the shows with when the director goes up, I can't say. That makes me more nervous than standing backstage waiting for Ben Hecht to walk on stage. Yeah.
Personally, I've gotten past the fear of the public speaking, but I keep telling people, don't expect me to improv.
Mm. Yeah.
I work with scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I can improv a little, but... You know, I'm an actor. I work with scripts.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've managed to get past both those things. Yeah.
I mean, I can do it. I just don't like it. I get more nervous.
20-plus years of teaching.
Well, yeah.
When
once
you're
teaching.
In front of a group of teenagers every single day and you have to keep their attention and get things across and whatever.
Now,
that'll cure you.
The part that makes me the most nervous and anxious is after the show. When you go out into the audience.
Yeah, and just saying
I'm done. I'm like, my job here is done. I am gone. I'm out the back door. See I'll see you at the next performance.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, to me, it's like, because I am surprisingly an introverted person. I do not enjoy crowds.
I don't enjoy being around people.
Well, and it's interesting. So,
he's not a just, people person, is
no,
what he's saying.
But
why did we let him into the green room while he was knocking?
I know, right? But again, I think it goes
to... I put out a saucer of milk and this is what comes back.
It goes back to playing a character.
Right.
I can do all those things on stage, but once it's over, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. But I think a lot of actors are introverted.
And
that I wonder if that's part of what draws us to acting is because... I can now play people I wish I were.
Yes, I can
Or I don't want to be.
Else.
I can be completely
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you absorb yourself in that other character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be Big Daddy or Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
Twice. But, you know, I had to get it in. But there you go.
I think it also goes back to having a script. I think that a lot of people, I don't know, he's Leonardo DiCaprio on the bow of the ship right
now.
Daddy
Warbucks.
What was I saying?
You have to have a script.
Because when you are in a social situation, you have to make polite conversation. I'm terrible at polite conversation. I can be...
You're pretty good at impolite.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I can be rude all day long.
Wow. But
and out in left field.
And there we go. The true feelings emerge. No, you know, small talk. I'm not good at small talk.
No, I don't understand.
Whereas when you're on stage, you have a script, you say your words, you can interact, you can speak, whatever, but don't ask me to make small talk. I'm not very good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to promote something here. I do a radio show here, local radio show.
What?
Yes.
I know.
You're kidding.
No. You're such a good actor.
I know. I had him fooled. That
really?
I
yeah, you did. But it's funny because the people that have been in radio that work for the station and all that, they laugh at me because every week I type out the songs, how long I have before this whatever, which you really should do, but then I type out every word I'm going to say.
Oh.
And they say, which is why you hear the same thing over and over. But the thing is, everybody's laughed at me and said, that's not what DJs do. You go with the moment, you go with the flow, you know, blah, blah, blah. I have tried that, and you can hear it when I'm not on script because all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to say this. And then the song ends, and I go, hey, okay, next one is, well, so then I have to jump back in the script so I know what I'm going to say. And I think that's because, you know, for 40-plus years I've been an actor more than, you know, trying to be the DJ that I want to be. And a script is what I need. Mm-hmm. So,
And I'll give a little secret out to all our listeners here. You'd probably be shocked to know that every word that we say during this podcast is scripted.
Yes, we all have.
I'm supposed to act. We're surprised here.
Yeah.
What?
I spilled coffee on my script.
Genius,
I went
Ron.
Off a little
Genius.
Bit. That's when I stumble a little. I can't read around the coffee stains.
I got a rock.
Yeah. Well,
I got that.
Yeah, interesting. Great discussion, but we have to move on to a couple other things before we run out of time here. Carol.
That's me.
I believe that you saw a show, and it's one that's making the rounds in community theaters.
Yes.
And tell us about it.
Okay. So I went to see a show a couple of weeks ago, almost a month ago now, and it was a well-known show. It was the first time I had seen it. It's a musical, and it's a comedy. And for the most part, it was very well done. The leads were wonderful. But my concern was the background dancers.
The ensemble?
The ensemble, yeah. The dancers, the ensemble, the lesser characters. There were a lot of people in the show. There were 30 people in the show. And it seemed to me that the only people who really paid attention to who their character was at the moment were the people who were doing the actual speaking in that scene.
So the leads.
The leads or, yeah, if the leads were interacting with a lesser character for the moment. But when I was watching, like when there was a dance number, every single one of those dancers looked like they were dancing with thumbtacks in their shoes. They were in pain. And I thought, you are sucking the fun out of this for me because you are not having a good time. So I don't know if it was just that they were concentrating on what was going on. The same with the background characters in many of the other scenes. They just all looked like they would rather be anywhere else than where they were. It was the first time I've run across that. And like I say, the numbers, there were some beautiful voices in the show. Some of the characters had beautiful voices. So it wasn't that. And like I say, the main characters were good. But it's like you cannot forget that even though the emphasis of the scene is not on your character, you are still on stage and people could be watching you. And the energy that you give off has to be matching what's going on stage. I mean, if it's a death scene, yes, you want to look somber. But if it's a big goofy dance number, you do not want to look like you're in pain. So it was very odd to me. It was the first time I had noticed that to such a strong degree. Because when I go to a show, I don't just watch the main character. I look at everybody who's on stage. I pay attention to blocking. I pay attention to, you know, how they move the scenes around and whatever. And it was funny because when I went to this show, on one side of me, I had Kathleen from the podcast, who obviously has a lot of theater experience. And on my other side was a friend of mine with no theater experience. So the things that she was commenting on were vastly different from the things that Kathleen and I were noticing.
What was the age group of the performers?
The age group, the youngest one was probably, I think, maybe 16, and then all the way up through, you know, 60s.
Okay, so it's not a children's
show. It was not a children's show, no, not at all.
They did the straight show and...
Yes, yeah, the full show. It was not a junior, it was full show, it was adults. Some of the characters, there was one particular character that I thought was horribly miscast. Voice was beautiful, but I had a really hard time buying into the character because, how can I say this? They did not fit my perception of what that character should look and act like, if that makes sense. I just felt like it was a miscasting. My opinion, you know, as a... off wannabe director or past director.
Member.
Yeah, but I'm like, I would not have put that person in that role. Even though the person had a beautiful voice and the acting was very nicely done, it didn't work for me. But in any case, the main takeaway I had from it was that it's so important as a director to remind your actors that every single moment they are on stage, they need to be in their character. They need to be participating in the mood on stage. They need to be generating the emotions. Because I don't care if you're standing three rows back. If there's a surprise event on stage, I want you to look surprised. Even though you've seen it 15 times in rehearsal, you know it's coming, you know it's fake, whatever. I want to see your reaction because you are not just a body on the stage. You are a character in a play. And that's what I felt was missing from this production. Like I say, the leads were fabulous. Didn't have a problem with the music. It was well done. But it was the background actors that really kind of disappointed me a lot.
And going with your theme, we did the producers, and I was in that.
Mm-hmm.
And about a month later, I was walking out to the parking lot and a lady stopped me and said, I just want to let you know that I saw the producers when you guys did it. And I have to tell you, I enjoyed it more than the one I paid X dollars to see it in Chicago. Because you guys actually were having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that the other people were just there and wanted to get out.
Yeah.
But to the... when you guys were on stage, we watched you. And it looked like you guys were the only ones really having fun.
Yeah. And it's easy to do if there are, because there were 30 people in this cast, and there were times when all 30 people were on stage. It's easy to think nobody's going to see what you're doing and to drop your face. You can't. You can't. And as an actor, you need to remember that. And as a director, you need to be reminding your actors of that as well. And so for me, that was the thing that I found most curious and most disappointing in the show.
So that's where we stand right now as of today. We are running a little bit long, so I think we may be running long, maybe not. Time just goes by so fleetingly here.
Time flies when you're having fun.
We are made the stuff we dreams are made of, or something to that effect, mm-hmm. right? So once again, it looks like we're out of time for this episode, and I would like to thank each and every one of you out there once again for listening. We appreciate all your support that you give us and that you give to your own theaters. We also appreciate feedback, conversation from you, so be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun. I keep saying fun. Visit our Facebook page. We'll tell you when the next episode drops. And search for Monroe Community Players Podcast, Green Room Groupies, or the Art and Business of Community Theater. Emails may be sent to mcppodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org. And to keep up with the latest shows and activities of MCP, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. We release two episodes a month. Please take a moment to subscribe, like, and otherwise rate us and help us spread the word that we are here. We haven't heard from South Africa in a while. So,
hello, South Africa.
They'll thank you. Welcome back, Canadians.
Yes.
Thank you.
We're elbows
glad,
up.
Glad that you're back. The Arts and Business Community Theater is presented by the Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe County Library's Ellis Branch Podcast Studio overlooking the historic River Raisin in Monroe, Michigan, distributed with the assistance of MPACT, Monroe Public Access. It also goes without saying that all the opinions expressed during this podcast are those of the individual expressing them and no one else. For the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you
in the green room.
A little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.